Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined, as always, by my trusty sidekick, Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, in the Polar Studios, and you're soon to be in the newly furnished Rocky Mountain Studios, right?
That is correct. This is our last broadcast, many thousands of miles away, as I am soon to relocate from the Florida region to the Rocky Mountain region.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also a big day for me because I found out two things this morning when I got to work that the Alaskan PFD is coming this week, supposedly, which is basically the oil shakedown money that we get every year for Alaska residents. And I was followed by Buddhism on Twitter today. I'm excited. The entire religion of Buddhism.
They're following you.
Apparently.
Okay. Well, let us know how that goes. Keep us updated.
All right. Yeah, I'm hoping to, get total enlightenment, of course.
Yes. All right. Let's get going.
All right.
But first, let's say a side update. Many new people listening, reading the blog, which we haven't blogged much of late. We need to get on that again. But we've been busy, folks.
Yeah. Everybody possibly changed jobs.
Yeah. So, to all you new listeners out there, if you are new to the show and you enjoyed the show, please tell somebody else who follows soccer to listen to the show. Say, hey, check it out. And you can check it out anywhere. We're on pretty much any app you could think of. But the big ones are we're on iTunes, of course. We're on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and I think it's called like .fm. I think that's an app.
Oh,
FM player, something like that. Anyway.
I don't know that one.
But, yeah, we're on there. But, hey, man, I was doing my site research, just seeing who's linking us, who's talking about us, doing the Google spy thing.
Yeah.
And this is – it's a little bit old. It's a few months old, but I can't believe I didn't find it before. But we have a huge fan of us on Reddit.
Oh.
Yes.
This is the MLS one? Because they're always retweeting me when I'm bashing
MLS. No. This is...
Oh.
there have been two separate threads in the past 2 months of people asking for suggestions on soccer-based podcasts.
Yeah.
And we have this guy. He goes by the... his handle on Reddit is Vangosu. V-A-N-G-O-S-U. Maybe this is you. Are you posting on Reddit as Vangosu?
No, forgot. Forgot my Reddit name. It's something ridiculous, but yeah, it's not Vangosu.
Okay, so anyway, thank you, Vangosu. Twice he has recommended to people who are looking for soccer podcasts, he has recommended Two Daft Yanks. So we don't know who you are, sir, but here's a round of applause for you.
I'm about to take a long sip of my beer just for that.
Yes, and sir or ma'am or miss, whoever you may be, if you are listening to this very episode, please get in touch with us either on the contact page or the website, 2daftyanks.com, or if you have a Twitter account, track us down at 2daftyanks. We would love to speak to you.
Yeah, because, anybody that likes us, we like you, I guess.
That is very true. So, all right, let's get into the footy talk. We have lots to talk about.
Yeah.
This weekend, Corey and I had derby fever with the North London derby. We also had the Merseyside derby, which was your early game on Saturday. And then we also had another non-official derby, which I am calling the faux Manchester derby, because West Ham was wearing Manchester City colors while they played Man U. So that was a little confusing, them wearing sky blue shirts and dark blue pants.
Yeah, with the...
what's going on here?
Yeah, like the Reverse City kit or something. Or
yeah, so there you go. Quasi-reverse. So it was the faux Manchester Derby. But anyway, let's talk about what Corey and I have been looking forward to, and that is the North London Derby, which ended up Arsenal 1, Tottenham 1 at the Emirates. Just give me your initial thoughts on this match, Corey.
My initial thoughts are I thought we were the better side despite giving up some counterattacking opportunities, because I mainly thought those counterattacking opportunities came from giveaways rather than takeaways, just some losing the ball in some really bad positions and losing it really cheaply. And I thought at the end we were pretty much banging on the door, just couldn't knock it down, mainly because we're pretty useless at corners these days. Even with a tall redwood like Mertesacker in there, that our corners just seem to constantly get blocked at the near post, or just delivered poorly to where they don't even clear that near post regularly these days. But I did think y'all defended well. I do think from the tactics employed, it looked like y'all basically set out for a draw, or to kind of sit back and try and nick it on the break. So I do think y'all in that second half did set out for that draw, because even after we got the equalizer, y'all still basically kind of sat back and played on the counter, which, obviously a road team's not going to change their tactics too much, even though it's literally down the road, but you're still on the road, crowd-wise. So other than that, I think even though I was disappointed in the result, because y'all have been pretty shaky lately, it was a game right for the taking for us, in my opinion. But I was actually more disappointed with the two injuries we picked up than the actual result, because I'm really getting fed up with the injury crap. It just seems like it's one thing to get injured players in challenges. We seem to get a lot of the injuries in just these seemingly innocuous happenstances, and I'm getting fed up with it.
Yes, and the club is fed up with it too. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did they not replace the majority of the fitness staff and the physio staff over the summer?
Yeah, and they brought in some new guy that completely different in how he has. Well, I don't want to say yet. Yeah, let me not say it that way, because I don't really know since I'm not there. But he supposedly has a pretty different fitness regime. So that's actually one of the things that a lot of the Arsenal sphere of Twitter was talking about Sunday and today was, now are the injuries perhaps not so much the new regime itself, but perhaps getting used to the new regime's training method, and that the players' bodies maybe going through a shock period, to where the injuries aren't happening necessarily because of the training regime, but because of the learning, the differences between going from one regime to another. So who knows, other than it's really becoming frustrating.
Yes, frustrating. And earlier you mentioned the fact that you thought that Spurs defended well, and I thought the very same. Going into the match, I thought we were going to get absolutely smashed. So it was actually good to see us, have some composure, show some fight. I thought Kabul and Vertonghen.
Yeah, I was going to say Kabul for sure had a good game, had a really good game.
It's good to see him finally coming into form and playing like he was before he had that knee injury 2 years ago, to where he was Spurs' best defender by far. So hopefully he could keep that going. Vertonghen had a strong game. And I must say that, if you look at the replay of the Arsenal goal, Spurs were pretty unlucky to concede in that fashion, because it basically was like one of those freak hockey plays to where, the guy fans on a shot, And then there just happens to be a guy right next to him who's able to knock it in, where everybody's gearing up to stop a shot from Welbeck, but he completely missed it, but nobody was making fun of him because he was bailed out by Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah, it was a world-class dummy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Did they joke about that? He did it on purpose, guys.
Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely, you know, within minutes of the goal. It's like, oh, the goal was created by Welbeck's clever dummy. It's like, yeah, okay. PR department, run with that.
Who said there were people?
Oh, just, you know, people on my Twitter account that I'm buddies with and stuff. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I got you. So it was no serious people.
Oh, yeah. No, no,
saying
no.
Saying that.
Yeah, no, no.
Okay, good. Thank God. All right, and then another thing that you mentioned was the tactics by Pochettino. I thought it was, you know, in a big derby match on the road, I thought that he set us out in the right way. And to use one of your words you like to use, I thought that the commentating crew, especially in the first half, was very disingenuous because they were basically slating Pochettino for not doing a full-out press. And I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, if Pochettino were to show up at the Emirates and doing a full-out press, leaving all that space with a high line and with the pace, you know, you guys have now with Chamberlain and Welbeck getting behind, they would have slaughtered him for doing that. So he's in a no-win situation. He doesn't press. Oh, he's not pressing enough. He's sitting back. Oh, what is he doing? So I thought that the commentators, because they hammered on it time and time and time again, and I just thought it was very disingenuous criticism.
Yeah, because press is another thing like counterattack. It's a term that gets thrown around a lot that there's actually many different ways you can press because I thought y'all still did press. It just wasn't in those high positions that they were talking about other than the Arteta position, that defensive midfield, to where y'all were pressing that position and forcing the outlet to go wide rather than into Arteta, where he can, you know, then distribute the ball and get our offense started, that's a tactic that's been employed against us for, you know, 2-3 years now, and that's one reason why we struggle sometimes, and that's how the goal was created. Y'all pressed Flamini didn't see Eriksen coming on the ball. Eriksen nicks the ball off of Flamini, and, you know, 5 seconds later, y'all score. So I thought y'all did press. It just wasn't in those positions where they expected or where the announcers expected. And, you know, a lot of that announcer crap a lot of times is it's a narrative-driven thing anyway. You know, even though Lee Dixon is, despite being an Arsenal supporter, is – and maybe it's because I'm an Arsenal supporter, but he does seem a little more level-headed than a lot of those guys when he does matches. But yeah, so a lot of times press is one of those kind of catch-all phrases that are announced just throughout. Well, they're not pressing. It's like, no, they are. They're just not pressing in the positions, you know, you're necessarily looking at or highlighting.
Yeah, no, and they did. They mentioned that it was only a half press, and they were disappointed. I go, well, of course, you're not going to go to the Emirates and do a full-out press because you're going to get ripped to shreds if you do.
Yeah, and I think Pochettino, the reason why he didn't do that, he was expecting, because you mentioned Oxlade-Chamberlain and Welbeck, I think he was expecting the same tactics or the same lineup we put out against Villa where we had Sanchez out wide. So I think he was expecting that triumvirate of Oxlade-Chamberlain or somebody like, you know, another guy with pace with Welbeck and Sanchez. So I think he was expecting that triumvirate of pace and what he didn't So I think that's why he kind of set back and didn't press higher up. But like I said, that's always going to be something with the English announcers is that why aren't they pressing all over the place and they're not putting in the effort and they're not pressing this and that and blah 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 when it's like you said, it's like if you do that in every game, it's, you know, you're going to get slaughtered in certain games.
Mm-hmm. Now there's two things that kind of caught my eye, just kind of funny stuff that I noticed. I don't know if you saw, if you see the extended replay of Spurs' first goal, one of the last defenders was Mertesacker. And after Spurs scored the goal, he is near the...
Yeah, he almost got...
It was against the near post, and he went to kick the near post, but he missed it and got his foot stuck in the goal net.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's. I saw a replay of that, and I was like, I was with all the injuries with all the muscle injuries we've had recently. I saw that, and I was like, Jesus Christ! I'm surprised Mertesacker didn't pull his groin or something doing that, getting stuck in the net.
Yeah, but he missed the post and got his foot stuck in the net. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, no, I did see that.
Yeah, and then here's some manager style critique, and I'll get your opinion on this. So if you noticed, at the beginning of the match, you know, Wenger went for the very, you know, old school buttoning all the buttons in his suit, where Pochettino, you know, left the bottom two unbuttoned. Yeah. I'm surprised the commentators were, you know, talking about that. About, oh, what is the psychology? What does that say about their teams?
Yeah, because you remember a few years ago when everybody was looking into the deeper meanings of all the handshakes?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, that's definitely or meaning that, yeah, that it's funny how sometimes things like that do come up and that, because of the narrative-driven style of broadcast now, how little things like that that really, really don't mean a whole hell of nothing, you know, sometimes do get, you know, do get overplayed. Although I will say, now granted, we haven't got to the dead of winter yet. I'm just glad Wenger hasn't done, you know, the heavy jacket with, you know, with his old nemesis, the zipper lately.
Oh, it's coming.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. But, granted, we haven't got to the dead of winter because, yeah, that really long Gore-Tex-looking jacket with the zipper, you know. For all his flaws, that's his worst one is he can't work that damn zipper.
Do we have that? I'm sure if you go to a meme generator, someone has that. Like him trying to zip up the caterpillar coat is what I call it because it's got all the rings.
You're right, right.
With the, you know, the Game of Thrones, winter is coming.
Yeah, no, because it's yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous at times, but yeah. So yeah.
So I think that was on the level of things. I think 1-1 is a fair result. And as a Spurs supporter, hey, I'm happy to get a point off Arsenal and a goal because last year we got no points in three games, including one cup match, and we scored no goals. So we're way ahead of the game already.
Yeah, disappointed with the draw, but yeah, I'm definitely not gonna argue with you that you didn't deserve more, because I'm actually glad we got the winning goal because you know there was a good 15 minutes or so where I was like, yeah, they're gonna freaking win it and get all three.
Well, no, the goal was always coming. Now you may be able to talk about this more than I didn't do the research, but you know, shutting out Arsenal at the Emirates. It's a pretty hard thing to do.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I don't know about overall, but I do know in North London derbies, we've not failed to score at home, and I want to say it's like over two decades now or something. It's
so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So we missed this last week, but it's time for one of our new segments, Corey. And you have the honors this week. What is this segment?
You make the call, but I gotta make a quick comment about the gong sounds kind of spacey this week. I kind of like it.
It's a space gong, yes. And actually, I did some research on the You Make the Call, and I couldn't remember if it was a baseball thing or a football thing.
Yeah.
And I can now confirm that I think it got its birth from my research on the Google machine from Monday Night Football. It used to be a segment on Monday Night Football like in the 80s where they would show, you know, a controversial play and then say,
right,
is this a first down or is he down by contact? And, you know, and then they'd go to commercial and then right. They would show the answer afterwards. So.
Yeah, no, because I was like you. I couldn't remember which one, and there may have been both because I could have swore there was a segment that was similar on This Week in Baseball, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I thought so too. So anyway, so it is my turn for You Make the Call. So Corey, lay it down.
All right. Before we scored the equalizing goal in the North London derby, there was a set piece where I believe it was Per Mertesacker actually got on the end, headed the ball towards goal. Hugo Lloris, however you say it, double L from Spanish makes me want to pronounce the Y, but he's French, so it confuses me. So anyway, Lloris makes a good save, ball rolls towards the post, and the ball looks like it may have crossed the line, may not have, can't really tell. And of course, the goal line technology on the broadcast only showed the initial save. And of course, everybody on Twitter's like, yeah, but what about when the ball rolls towards the post, blah, 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 blah. And of course, after the match, people are tweeting photos supposedly showing, because as you said, you know, with everything nowadays, perhaps it was photoshopped. There's a photo where it seems to show green grass in between the ball and the line. And as I stated to you today on IM, it's like, well, even if that's true, and even if it was photoshopped, or even if it was photoshopped, that's still technically not evidence of the ball being over the line, because since a soccer ball is a spheroid, you can actually have that plane still being broken by the line crossing the ball, and the ball's not actually across the line, even though, you know, you see green grass. So you make the call this week: is the ball over the line? If you see green, or is the ball, you know, still not crossing the line?
You just answered the question when you asked the question, though. What is wrong with you?
Well, no,
you did. You answered the question.
I know, I understand that, but by the rule book, which one isn't? I understand the practical usage, but in the rule book, what's the call?
Oh, rule book wise.
Yes.
I got you. Rule book wise, the correct call was made because, as you said, the whole idea is planar areas, and it's not like football to where, you know, a touchdown in American football, the ball just has to break the plane. But in soccer, the entire ball has to be past that plane. So since the ball is round, half the ball could be across the line, and you could get the illusion from certain angles that the ball is completely over. But if there's just a little edge hanging over the line, it's a no goal.
Correct, because like you said, since it's round, you can technically have green grass between the ball and the line, but that ball is still on the line because it's hanging over the line, even though there's grass in between at the bottom. So yeah, so I understood. I explained what happened, but I meant in the rule book, what was the call?
I gotcha. You rambled like you always do, and you confused me.
Yes,
it's rubbish. But it's okay. So there we go. So we educated ourselves about lines and planes and football rule books. I wish you would have the exact, you know, like according to rule 9.3-1-A or something.
Yeah, that I don't have. I just know it's okay. Definitely, it's all planar.
Yes. So there we go.
Yeah, I was not on my Arsenal Brethren's bandwagon of, that's clearly proof of a goal, because I was, nah, it's not actually.
Oh, so there is our long-winded version of you make the call with the space gong.
Yeah, spacey gong.
All right, let's kind of just fly through some other the highlights. Sorry, we're a little long on Arsenal Tottenham, but hey, we have the right to be.
Yeah, it's the one chance, you know, or one of the times you let me talk about Arsenal. So
that's true. This is true. All right, so before Arsenal Tottenham was another derby, and that was the Merseyside derby, where Everton made the track across the park, you know, that green space. I forget the name of it. I should know.
Yeah, the name escapes me at the moment as well.
From Goodison over to the Kop there.
Anfield,
yes. Liverpool, Everton. And so that ended in a 1-1 draw as well with a incredible goal in stoppage time by England international channeling my Gus Johnson, who's gone, by the way, still. We talked about that, of course. But Phil Jagielka scored quite a goal for a center back to tie the game. And Steven Gerrard on a free kick. And so really my only comment on this game, Corey, and I'll get your point, is now we talked about this when Balotelli came. Mm-hmm. Now, I found it very, very, very odd that for most of the game, Balotelli was allowed to take the free kicks. And I'm like, why is Balotelli doing the free kicks when you have one of the best free take kickers? I don't know if he's one of the best, but he's well above average in terms of playing in England. When you have Steven Gerrard, who, you know, has been taking free kicks for Liverpool for ages, why is Balotelli... The only reason Balotelli was getting those chances, in my opinion, is because they're trying to feed his ego, make him feel important. But it's at, you know, it's at a disadvantage to them because he's not nearly as good as Gerrard is in those situations. And sure enough, late in the game, Gerrard gets his chance and he buries it. So what are your thoughts on free kicks and such at Liverpool?
Yeah, I'm like you. That why isn't Gerrard taking all of them? Or that's definitely one of the things that baffles me from the coaching experiences that I came up through American football with. That it's still kind of a novelty to me that the players kind of sort out who takes the corners and the free kicks and the penalties sometimes when I'm like, shouldn't that be something the coach says, hey, you know, when the ball's in this position, you take it. When the ball's here, you take it. You know, when it's in this position, you take it. And you go in the box regardless of what you think you can do. So, yeah, at a place like Liverpool, that seems – even more heightened to me when you have, like you said, when you have Gerrard or a guy like Gerrard who has a long history of, you know, of a very high skill level and you know, a real prowess at set pieces, that, you know, you're trying to accommodate a guy like Balotelli who's, you know, let's be frank, he's only been around you know, the halls of Liverpool for a couple of months, and you know, you're trying to, you know, get him acquainted doing that. It's like, no, dude, get in the box, get on the end of this, if anything, you know?
Definitely. I just thought it was odd. And, I mean, I understand they're just trying to feed his ego and keep him happy. So when those chances dry up, I don't know. I think the him getting into his, you know, his cycle to where he's causing problems is just around the corner now.
Yeah, because that's the thing with players like Balotelli. He's like, okay, he's behaved for a year, you know, kind of like he did at Manchester City after all his travails at Milan. But, you know, as we'll probably get into later with Rooney, does that really mean that a player's changed, or is it because everything's kind of – or because the environment's kind of new? Is he just kind of behaving because – you know, everything's new and he's still got kind of getting used to it, and you know, he hasn't acted out or he hasn't gotten bored yet or whatever it is, you know, people like him do that make him act out. Because, yeah, I mean, it's fine, you know, that he's not doing anything now, but, you know, 18 months from now, is it going to be the same?
Definitely. So it's something to keep your eyes on what happens, especially if he's not, you know, scoring goals. And as we said before, when he's not scoring goals, he's not like Suarez, who looks to play others into the game. He's going to sulk and be isolated. So,
yeah, because the problem with egos like Balotelli too is, okay, Gerrard scores the goal. Well, Balotelli he's still the kind of person that's like, well, so what? I'm going to take the next one. Or, you know, I still want to take the next one because, yeah, I'll score too. Where, you know, some players, you know, they would get the message of, okay, yeah, you're right. You take the free kicks from now on. Like I said, Balotelli's the kind of ego. It's like, okay, well, yeah, you scored. I still want to take the next one. So what?
All right. Now our next edition of Derby Fever is the faux Manchester Derby, as I said. Manchester United playing West Ham wearing Man City colors. In that match, we had three first-half goals. Rooney scored the opening goal, if memory serves me correct, followed yes. by Van Persie. Sacco scored one to draw one back for West Ham. And then in the second half, all hell broke loose, and West Ham had a real chance to, you know, draw or win the game, when in the 59th minute, Wayne Rooney was dealt a red card for just a petulant kick that, I don't know, I'm still not sure exactly if it hit the guy in the knee or if it caught him in the knee and the nads. Now, I posted on Twitter, man, he went for the nads. It was the nad kick from behind. But pretty yeah, petulant.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, I think he caught a little bit of everything. That old Rooney. So the captain of Manchester United was sent off, and now he's looking at a 3-game ban because of violent conduct. So what say you about this Rooney situation?
Yeah, because I thought it was pretty ridiculous because, you know, his excuse that I read today doesn't really hold water for me either, because his excuse was, well, he was able to extend away from me further than I expected, so that's why my leg was extended, and that's why I caught him, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there going, no, that still doesn't explain why your foot was that high or why your leg was that extended, because if you're going to commit the personal foul there, you know, you might clip the heels or catch the foot and, you know, trip him that way. But, you know, I mean, it's pretty obvious that it was the typical Rooney moment of he just lost his head. He got pissed off because he lost the ball. And he was like, nope, I'm just chopping this guy down. And I don't give a shit because I'm Wayne Rooney. Because at first I thought he caught him square in the balls. But, you know, obviously when I saw it, the replay a few times, it caught his front knee. But I do think it still kind of caught, you know, his groin area too. But, like I said, his excuse is frankly a bunch of bullshit because, like I said, his excuse that he gave doesn't explain why his foot was that high or that extended regardless of how far away the guy was from him, because if anything, if he's that further away from you, that means his ankles are going to be closer to you. So, like I said, if that was excuse, clip the ankles and not the knees. So, like I said, of course, everybody's trying to – or everybody that's taken up for Rooney is going on about, well, Vieira used to get sent off and Keane used to get sent off and these guys used to get sent off as captain and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. It's different. It's different with Rooney because coupled with his attitude like last week where he's blowing up on his own teammates, to me it shows a pattern of just, you know, that volatile type of situation that he doesn't do well with, and that it's – Or meaning that because he's not mature and he's not a proper – he's not a traditional leader. I mean, he's not a leader in my book at all, but just to concede to the point that maybe I'm wrong, that he's definitely not your traditional leader where, yeah, he may be vocal, but, you know, his actions let his club and his country down at times, and that you know, he still has these moments of complete petulance, and that, like I said, regardless of what his excuse was, that was a petulant type of tackle. Because, like I said, I don't believe his excuse at all. So,
no, I'm with you. And the only thing I'll add is just think if this was, you know, a foreign player making this type of tackle in the same situation, the media, the commentators would all say, oh, the dirty foreigners are, you know, coming over and soiling our great game. They'd be they would be saying that, no doubt.
Well, yeah, because again, you know, a lot of people were trying to slag off or, you know, explain it away and slag off when Vieira was captain. And, well, you know, when Vieira was Arsenal's captain, he used to get sent off, blah, blah, blah. And again, it was different that Rooney's a 10-year veteran. Vieira was getting sent off as captain when he was still, you know, basically in the infancy, or not in the infancy, but he wasn't a 10-year veteran. He wasn't a long-time player. He was still at the beginning or near the beginning of his Premier League career, and he wasn't the captain of his nation either, because that's the other thing I think people are overlooking, is that he's looked to, because he's, you know, the captain and the perceived best player at the biggest club in England, and some people would argue the biggest club of the world. You just can't act like a freaking 12-year-old pissed off little brat when things happen. That's just something that you can't do in the modern world. And regardless of these excuses people want to come up with, like I said, it's one thing to even be petulant against opponents, but he's petulant against his own teammates. And like I said, to me, that's just not proper captain material. And I joked on Twitter that, you know, if Rooney was the captain of my ship, I would probably participate in mutiny.
Well, maybe we are seeing, maybe this is a warning sign of the end times and the apocalypse. Perhaps Rooney is one of the four horsemen, and he is, in fact, petulance.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
That'd be pretty scary.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, you know, of course, Man U fans are gonna back him, but, and, you know, they can call me a hater all I want, but the fact of the matter is, he isn't true captain material.
No, and, to be fair, the few Manchester United fans that I did interact with over the weekend have all said, yes, that's a red, and I'm ashamed by his actions.
Oh, yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah, sorry, let me clarify. The ones that are defending him, if I didn't say that, that's what I meant. But, yeah, the ones that are defending him can call me a hater all they want, but, you know, he's not proper captain material for me.
All right, now let's take a listen to one of our favorite sounds and something we haven't talked about in a while.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the world of financial fair play.
Oh.
I know a lot of you don't like to hear about it, but we're going to keep talking about it because it's here to stay, for better or worse. So we have two clubs in England in danger here under some financial fair play problems. And so, Corey, give us the first club that you're more in tune with the story. Who is it?
Queen's Park Rangers. And, you know, people may be asking, well, how can Queen's Park Rangers be violating fair play when they're near the bottom of the league and they haven't really bought players and this and that and blah, blah, blah? Well, as Chad has pointed out on several occasions before, that the Football League, which is the three divisions beneath the Premier League, have their own financial fair play rules, which if Queen's Park Rangers hadn't gotten promoted, would have been in clear violation, you know, of said rules, and would be subjected to pretty high fines, mainly because of their wage bill, not necessarily because of the players they bought or because of the transfer fees paid. But yes, so where it becomes an issue is because of their pretty poor form at the start of the season. They're looking to be relegation candidates early on, and I was reading during the week that if Queen's Park Rangers are to indeed be relegated at the end of the year, that the Football League may not even accept their admittance back into the Football League and may forcefully administratively relegate them to non-league football and the conference, which would be pretty drastic. And I can't think of an occasion offhand in England where that's happened. I know it's happened in France several times over the last couple decades, where a few teams from Ligue 2 and Championnat National, the third tier in France, were relegated to the fifth and sixth tiers of French football. But yeah, it would be a pretty drastic occurrence to happen in England, because, you know, in France, places like France, it's one thing because some of the clubs aren't well supported in terms of attendance. But, in places like England, where you still have a pretty good attendance rate, even though Loftus Road only seats 18,000. You know, they're still getting a pretty good you know percentage of that 18,000 in each week. It would be a pretty monumentous occurrence if that were to happen.
Yes, and punishment is coming sooner than you think. According to this Guardian article I'm looking at right now, they're saying that the Football League will make a decision by December 1 is the deadline to make this decision. And so QPR, at the very least, is facing a possible £40 million fine.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, even with promotion, they were still in violation of the rules.
Correct.
But that because the Premier League and the Football League are technically two separate entities, that's the reason why Queen's Park Rangers isn't fined right now, if I was understanding what I read earlier correctly.
I think that is correct. So it is very fluid, and as we said, nobody really knows these rules, so we may have to get our financial fair play expert, get in touch with him over in England, who we've worked with in the past, to get his answers on these. And I'll dive right into the club that I've read the article on, and this is coming in the past couple of days, that now Liverpool is under UEFA investigation for financial fair play. And we were told last year that they wouldn't be, but apparently that's not the case, because UEFA has announced that Liverpool is under investigation. And here is the laundry list of problems they have. In the past two seasons, they have lost £49.8 million and then £40.5 million before the two summers, you know, before this summer where they, you know, sold Suarez. So they'll get some cash in, but they're still, that's, you know, $90 million in the hole there. So that's a lot of money to overcome. Granted, when you can only lose about, you know, $45 million in this time. So they're twice over the expected amount. And it was reported at the end of last season, when Liverpool was about to make the Champions League, that they couldn't be investigated because you couldn't be investigated until you were already in, which is true. But we thought that there couldn't be any punishments this season, but there could be. This article, The Guardian, states that Liverpool could face fines as soon as this season that would basically take away their Champions League TV money from the group stages, and if they were to make it to the knockout stage as well. So that'd be a pretty hefty blow to Liverpool and their commercial and financial efforts if that were to come through. But being the size of club that they are, I would expect absolutely nothing serious to happen to Liverpool, as we saw, you know, Manchester City and the other clubs who were, you know, got the slap on the wrist this summer.
Well, yeah, because my cynical expectation would be, you know, they would basically get I don't know if honorary is the right word, but an honorary punishment rather than an actual punitive punishment, as you know, just said, like Manchester City, where regardless of however people want to argue how big or how little a roster punishment is, you know, these clubs aren't going to learn until you start hit. You know, it's like anybody else. A fine isn't really going to change somebody's behavior until you really affect their bottom line, i.e. with taxes or, you know, with fines. But, you know, as long as the fines are, you know, aren't hurtful in a pocket sense, you know, they're just going to be the proverbial slap on the wrist, and the, you know, these clubs are just going to go on about their way, and if nothing else, they're cynically just going to start, you know, factoring that into their budget of, okay, well, you know, if all we're going to get is fine $50,000, well, we'll just you know, skim a little we'll skim a little revenue, you know, from the merch side or whatever, and we'll just pay the fine with that. So, like I said, until these fines or punishments really start to hit big clubs, you know, where they feel it, i.e., empty, you know, four games behind closed doors, you know, with no fans, loss of TV revenue, loss of actual placements in tournaments. You know, I'm going to continue that the financial fair play is nothing more, you know, than an illusion to give people to make it look like UEFA's doing something when, like most authoritative institutions, it's really about the illusion of doing something. Because again, the way these big clubs attract revenue and sponsors for UEFA, again, it's to me, it's all a big ruse to give the illusion like they're doing something, but they really don't care at the end of the day what these clubs really do.
Yeah, the problem is when you levy fines against, you know, clubs who are like Manchester City, who are basically state-owned, who have billions of dollars.
Right.
What's a $10 million fine going to do? They're just going to laugh at that and write it off, exactly. And the other thing that's disappointing to me is it was reported at first that these fines would go against your turnover, which would make it kind of like a double punishment, where then you're actually talking where it's a punishment to where, okay, that's going to count as a loss in your books. But no, they waive that as well. So what are you going to do? You're not teaching anybody anything at that point.
Yeah, because like you said, you know, fine in Liverpool's one thing, but Man City, since they're owned by, you know, one of the umpteen sheiks of the UAE, you know, if you really want to logically follow it out, you know, you could even make a philosophical point of, well, if I levy a $50 million fine on Man City, does that mean, you know, people in the UAE are going to be worse off because one of the sheiks of the UAE is just going to take that money out of the public coffers because, because technically all the oil wealth is owned by the sheiks and not the people or a company anyway. So, like I said, if you want to be really fluid about the situation, you could almost argue that, well, if you do find Man City, you might be hurting 100,000 people in the UAE, you know?
Yeah, it's a human rights issue.
Yeah.
How dare you, UEFA?
I would like to think it wouldn't be like that, but again, that's the problem with these quasi state-owned clubs is that, you know, it's a legitimate possibility, especially if you're talking about, you know, X umpteen millions of dollars of fine, or, you know, especially once you get into the double-digit multi-million dollar fines.
Definitely. All right, so that's going to wrap up that financial fair play talk, and we're going to end today's show talking about two of the clubs that played in the last half of this weekend. And I thought yesterday was great, Corey, because, you know, Burnley kind of had a stage to itself for once, being, you know, the only game of the day. They played West Brom. And I just want to ask you, now that we're early in the season, mind you, but I think there should be some cause for concern, because if you look at the table as it currently stands, you will see that Burnley is at the bottom of the table on 3 points with a -7 goal differential. But the big red flag is through 6 games, they've only scored 1 goal. So how big of a concern is that for Sean Dyche and his club at this point in time?
Well, it's a huge concern, because that's the problem with being a smaller club like Burnley, or, you know, smaller club in PL terms. That's the problem with being a smaller club like Burnley is you can be tight at the back all you want, but at some point you have to score goals, and, you know, one goal through 6 games. Obviously, the question is, are they going to have enough firepower to last throughout the season? Because, you know, theoretically speaking, you draw all 38 games 0-0, you're probably going down with 38 points. So, again, you can be tight at the back all you want, but you know, even a small club, you got to score goals at some point. And Burnley doesn't show any signs of life on offense these days, so it would definitely be a huge concern if I was a Burnley fan. But again, as we talked about on our season preview show, maybe that's part of the reason why Burnley didn't buy a bunch of newer players to where they think they could compete in the PL, because maybe they, you know, they're already budgeting for going down back into the Championship and you know, limiting their losses, or, you know, maybe even turning a profit with the parachute payment or whatever.
That's possible. They may be doing those types of things. And in terms of goals, the fewest amount of goals scored in a Premier League season is 20, and that was by Derby County in 07-08. So
it had to be that Derby club, because, man, that was arguably the worst Premier League club I've ever seen.
Yeah, so do you think that Burnley is going to be going down that road to where they might be challenging for that horrible record?
Maybe, because, you know, I mean, obviously, if they don't make a move or two in the January window, I think that'll be your answer, that, you know, that what I think possibly happened will have happened, and that it'll go, yeah, we were here for a year. We're going to take the money and, you know, try and use it in the Championship instead.
Okay, and I hope that they are taking that long-term view, because, you know, Sean Dyche talked about that, their manager, in the preseason, that they have to kind of take a long view of this. And I hope that, you know, their board doesn't get trigger-happy here and maybe sack him, because really it's out of his control with the talent he has to work with at the club. So he's a good manager. He got them up. They look great. They just need to maybe, if they go back down, reorganize a little bit and come back up better or stronger. But again, we're only six games in, but I would be shocked at this point in time if Burnley wasn't one of your three relegated clubs.
Yeah, because again, Burnley may be doing the anti-QPR, because that's the problem QPR is facing, or the reason why they face the financial fair play stuff in the Championship, is that not only did they pay everybody Premier League wages, but they paid, you know, pretty good Premier League wages to a bunch of guys, and when they got relegated, now you have this massive wage bill that doesn't match you know, the revenue that comes in with the Championship. So again, maybe Burnley's learning from QPR that because we're not an established Premier League club, maybe we'll take the long-term view, try and consolidate our finances and our playing base, and maybe come back up, you know, in 2 years, and then, you know, then maybe spend a little more money and have a 3 or 4 year Premier League plan then. And if we don't, then, you know, we'll still be financially solid to compete in the Championship.
Yeah, so it'll be certainly interesting to see how that plays out. And then we'll move to today here, where Stoke beat Newcastle 1-0 off a Peter Crouch, a.k.a. Crouchy, header.
Oh, shocker. Crouchy with a header, I would have never guessed.
I know. Shocked. But the big story of that match, of course, is the ticking time watch on Newcastle manager Alan Pardew. And just to me, watching the game, it looked like that team had no fight in them. And he was just sitting there on the sideline, just stoic. Nothing's been announced as far as I know tonight. I've been digging around. But I think he knows his fate. I think he knows that he's going to be gone sooner or later. I don't know if he'll be fired this week, but he didn't look like a guy who was too concerned about his job. And even in his post-game comments, he was already busting out the lines of, well, I don't know what the future holds. I'm just going to manage this team to the best of my ability. Getting lines like that.
Yeah, and if you're telling me that the players look like they didn't put in a good fight, then I think that's your answer there, that I think his time's up and everybody knows it. It's just a matter of sorting out the actual paperwork and maybe lining up a new guy to replace him, so they don't have like a 2 week search and have to use a caretaker manager. So that's from what you're telling me about the game today, that's my take on that, is I think you know, Mike Astley and the board are probably lining up somebody, and once they – or, you know, they're probably doing an unannounced search, and once they find up somebody, they're going to pull the trigger, and that's when, you know, when Pardew will be canned.
Mike Astley, hire Sherwood, please, do it. We need him back.
Yeah. Or Redknapp will jump to Newcastle and somehow escape the clutches of financial, you know, financial crap that he leaves clubs in from QPR.
No. Mike Astley, hire the only guy who may be, in fact, a bigger jerk than Pardew. Hire Sherwood. Make this happen. No, they'll get somebody established. The guys on NBC were talking about our friend Skinny Leno, which I guess we could call him now. His old Steve Bruce. And I don't know if I could see Steve Bruce jumping ship in the middle of the year to go from Hull to Newcastle. I don't know.
Yeah, because I would agree with that, but I would extend the point to it would be one thing if Hull wasn't, you know, if Hull was doing really poorly, but you know, he's starting to build a little bit of a base at Hull, so I think that's why he would stay. Not so much that he would jump in the middle of the season, but yeah, I don't know. That's the kind of situation where it kind of cries out for, you know, because you said they'll probably go after somebody established, which I agree with. That kind of situation where you need to consolidate and get more effort and hustle into guys and have them fight more and get them solid, that kind of cries out for people like Martin O'Neill and those kind of guys for me. Because O'Neill's one of those guys that usually does pretty well in those kind of situations where, you know, he's got to come in and consolidate a club and right the ship and save him from relegation. So that would be the kind of name, or, you know, obviously somebody like Tony Pulis, which that would be an interesting situation with, you know, with the Geordie fan base.
It would be.
You know, because both of them can, you know, both of them like to fight, sometimes, you know, on the field and off the field, whatever. So those are the obvious names that are probably going to come up, but, you know, depending on what happens, I mean, obviously we'll have to see, but, you know, who knows, maybe Astley will go for somebody in the championship and take a risk, but I seriously doubt it.
Yeah, Pulis to Newcastle would certainly make Stoke Newcastle quite interesting.
Yes.
As it's not interesting enough already.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, the situation definitely has a kind of Martin O'Neill-esque vibe written all over it for me.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what his status is these days. He was with the Irish team, right, as an assistant or something. I do believe he left there.
Yeah, I'm not sure offhand, but like I said, it's the kind of situation where if he's not a manager somewhere, you know, I think he would either resign, or it would, you know, the club or the team would understand, and, you know, he would jump at it, but. Because, like I said, it's definitely the kind of situation that he usually does well in, where he's kind of got to right a ship. Now, I can guarantee you, come January, a lot of those French players and a lot of those foreign players that are in there the last few years will probably get sold off as he goes to more of a combative, you know, counterattacking style, you know, defensively solid style like he does. Now, again, I'm completely speculating, but, again, that's the kind of situation where a guy like Martin O'Neill comes in. So,
okay, and actually, Martin O'Neill actually is the manager. For some reason, I thought he left, but he is still the manager of the Republic of Ireland. So I don't know if he would leave that job when, you know, they're technically trying to, you know, qualify for the expanded European slots with the new expanded Euro, what is it going to be called? It'll be next year. Euro 2015, right?
2016.
Oh, 2016. Yeah, see, we're still 2 years out. So I don't know if he would leave in a campaign where they have a legit shot to get it in.
Yeah, no. Again, I was throwing his name out there as at the top of a hypothetical
Yeah,
list,
no, I got you.
but that's the kind of manager that I think Newcastle will go after is I guess what I meant more.
And there's a lot of people on those who have those experiences who they could bring in. So, all right, yeah. So I'm looking around the Two Daft Yank Florida studios, and they are being demolished.
Yeah.
Board by board. We got all kinds of Cuban labor in here working on this.
I'm sure Alonzo would be able to kick out a few.
That's true. So the next time we speak to you, I will be in my new studios, and I don't know if they will be ready next week or not. So maybe late next week we may have a pod where we can maybe preview some of the games for the coming weekend. Actually, that's an international break, isn't it?
I think so.
It is. Holy moly, folks. We got this weekend, and it's one of those pesky breaks again. So maybe we'll just take a break for the break. We'll have to see. We'll keep you posted.
Works for me, because I'm probably going to an Oktoberfest that weekend and probably won't be very I'll be even less useful than normal.
Okay. I got you. So I know this weekend the big game is Chelsea-Arsenal.
Yeah, which I'm I don't know. I mean, I'm not dreading it like a lot of people because, you know, I just don't get scared at matches like people do. But, you know, I'm not expecting the best because, you know, Mourinho's a freaking cunt.
And then other matchups of note include Manchester United-Everton. That could be pretty interesting. And then the big one for me, which is loads of interesting, is you have Tottenham hosting Southampton. So Pochettino will be facing his former club.
Yeah, which, again, like I mentioned a few weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, I can't keep stuff straight anymore, but a $20 flyer on Southampton might look good again this week.
That's
you know,
right.
You get pretty good odds, and, you know, they're in, like, third place or second place or something. It's crazy.
You never know. So, all right, well, we'll keep you updated, but it sounds like there will not be a show next week, so we'll take a break. You enjoy the break, and perhaps we'll get off our duffs and blog.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk with you next time.
Rooney the Loonie.